You're listening to the audio version of Victory Condition Gaming, sponsored by Forget Me Not Flowers and Gifts in Barrie, Vermont. You can check them out online at forgetmenotflowersbarrie.com. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, search for Victory Condition Gaming, and you can also follow me on Twitter at DougVCGaming. And if you'd like to watch us live every week, make sure to subscribe to Victory Condition Gaming on YouTube.
Hey everyone, welcome to our, I think this is the third session for GraniteCon at home. Hope everybody's been enjoying our coverage and our broadcast for this event. GraniteCon is a great convention here in, Northeast. It's in Manchester, New Hampshire. Unfortunately, they can't get together this year. But this year, I was hoping to bring this gentleman to the convention with me. And that, of course, is the one and only Andrew E.C. Gaska. His friends call him Drew, but I'm not allowed to call him Drew.
I thought we said that was okay now.
Oh, okay. I guess it is okay. Okay. Well, Drew, thanks for coming on and chatting with us for a little while. You do so many different things. I'd say introduce yourself and let folks know what you're what you do. I actually have your bio here, but it's like 3 pages long, so it would take up half the session if I read it. So do you want to just tell folks in a nutshell what you do or what you've accomplished and what you've worked on?
Sure. I'm the lead writer of Free League's Alien role-playing game. So I write the setting, the adventures, and the tone for the book. The rules are written by Thomas, the owner. And I've been a freelance franchise consultant for Fox on Alien, Predator, and Planet of the Apes. I've written a couple of Planet of the Apes novels. I wrote the in-house Predator Bible for Fox. Yeah, that's one of my Planet of the Apes novels right there. So I've done a few things.
Yeah, no, it's you've done quite a bit, and then you've worked for Rockstar Games for a little while. And
yeah, for 17 years I worked for them.
Wow, and you're just multifaceted. I think that's the term, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. What do, is this what you like envisioned? Like what you wanted to do? Like when you started your professional career?
I thought I was going to be an artist.
Okay.
I went to art school, and that's how I met everybody who led me into everything else. My mentor in college was Denny O'Neill of Batman fame.
Mm-hmm.
He recognized my writing ability and pushed me to move to being a writer more than an artist. And so, you know, I was doing things on the side and working for Rockstar for a very long time. Doing art stuff for them. And then I finally just decided this is what I really want to do. And I just put my all into it and I got somewhere. So I got lucky. That's the way I see it.
Well, hey, sometimes that's all it takes, you know, but I mean, you do have to have, you know, you have to do good work too, as well as be lucky. So it's a testament to the quality of the work that you put out that you've been able to work on all these great projects. It's very exciting. So let's just start right off the bat. Let's talk about Alien the RPG.
Okay. Right?
I'm sorry, I don't have an award for you for this convention.
That's all right.
I can
maybe, now, you know.
is there a Granite Connie award? I should talk to the owners and see if we can get you some sort of honorary award. I don't know. I it must be weird to do a online convention, one with pants on, and two and not receive a reward.
Well,
or an award.
It's you could call it a granity if you want.
A granity?
Yes, that could be a good award.
Nice, absolutely.
But, no, I've done a bunch of these online conventions. You know, I was just at Dragon Con a couple weeks ago. So yeah. You know, it's unfortunately it's not as great as getting to go to these places. And I also realized that like a lot of my exercise comes from traveling two or three places a month, especially during the summer, the summer months with doing conventions because it's such a busy season. So yeah, I'm looking forward to things getting back to normal, hopefully, unless there's just a new normal, which includes this being the normal.
Yeah, that's I think we were talking about this. We're wondering if maybe once all this this pandemic and everything kind of subsides, are a lot of conventions still going to keep their online, like, cons a thing, because how many people are really going to want to jump right out and go to conventions, you know, after all this? And, you know, if there's already a market for online conventions, you don't really want to just abandon that market either, you know?
Is it doing well?
I think it's doing okay. I mean, it's not like, I don't know. It's, you know, it's a thing that people do.
I think we need to see how it develops. I think everybody was just caught unawares this year. So, like, I think a lot of things could have gone smoother in a lot of places. I don't think San Diego was happy with the way the turnout was. Everything, we got involved with what's going on. You know, it's better to be safe. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. So, you are the IP consultant for Alien, Predator, and Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
That's amazing. Those are like three properties that I love. Like, that would just be like a dream come true for me. Like, I can't believe that, you know, we're just working on one would be a dream, but working on all three has got to be just, you must be pinching yourself every day.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because it's like I was saying before, I worked for Rockstar Games. And I always wanted to do something with licenses, you know, a huge Star Trek fan, obviously Alien, love Star Wars, all those things. And I always wanted to do comics or prose or games in them. And one day I went to a comic shop and there was a Planet of the Apes comic that hadn't been one in decades. And I was like, oh, wow, who's doing this? Is it Marvel? Is it DC? And it was someone called Mr. Comics. And I was like, who is Mr. Comics? And if Mr. Comics can get a license, why can't I? I got a business lawyer and I opened my business and we went after a whole bunch of things. And Planet of the Apes was the one that was interested in working with me. And
that's really cool.
Yeah. So we were hoping to do comics and Mr. Comics' license had run out.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, the studio decided they didn't want to do comics for a long time, probably because the sales weren't there on Mr. Comics' books. They said, yeah, we want to do this. And we go to Licensing Expo, and there were my lawyer and their people. And the woman in charge over there, she's like, wait a minute, this is about comics? We're not going to do comics. And I said, well, when I say comics, I mean, like, paintings with prose in it, you know, sort of like the Aliens Tribes book that came out in the 90s.
Okay. Yeah.
The woman that Debbie L. Shun, she's, you know, she doesn't work at Fox anymore, but she's like, Aliens Tribes is my favorite project I've ever worked on any license. You have your license.
Wow. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Lucked out, totally lucked out. So, I poured a ton of money into making that book. I hired all these top artists to work on the paintings in the book, and I wrote the book, and it came out, and it did pretty well, and it pretty much started my career, you know. Go ahead.
I have a question for you. Since this is something that you did on your own, and just you hired all the contract, like it seems like something like that nowadays would have probably gone to like a Kickstarter or a crowdfunding platform. And I don't know, maybe the IP didn't allow it or whatnot, but you would think that nowadays, to minimize the risk of the risk, that you would probably go with a crowdfunding option on something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, Fox doesn't really do Kickstarter.
Right, they're big, yeah.
But yeah, no, that would make sense. But I was making decent money at Rockstar, and I just felt like this is my chance to break into this business. I got to roll the dice. So I put, I honestly put about $40,000 into that project. Wow. And what do you call it? You know how people say, oh, I bought myself, I'm still paying back my career with my college loans. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, I bought my career with $40,000, I guess, because if I hadn't made that step, I don't know if I would have had the right connections to get where I was going. Sure. But I went working with all these top artists, and in regards to becoming a franchise consultant over at Fox, Josh Izzo, who was in charge of the franchise department at the time, well, after Debbie left, he contacted me one day, and he's like, yeah, so our franchise department's trying to go to figure out the Planet of the Apes timeline. And none of us really can. And I actually read your book, and it seems to me you know this better than we do. Do you want to be a franchise consultant? And I was like, yeah.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah. So I mean, yes, skill, taking gamble chances, and also, you know, luck and who you know, and it's all these things to combine. Sure, sure. And it's like, I've told the story about, you know, deciding to go get the license and make it myself at many conventions. And most of the creators I've talked to is like, yeah, that's not how it usually happens at all. And I was like, I know. That's why I say I'm lucky.
Well, here's the thing. We live in this age where, you know, we have so much access to people online now that even if this is something you want to do, if you want to become like a publisher or you want to be an, you know, want to get involved with an IP, you might not get the IP that you is your top choice, but you can send an email out to hundreds of people mm-hmm. online. And even if you get response once, you've got your foot in the door. Like, I mean, that's the mentality that I always think of. Like we live like years ago, back when I was growing up, mm-hmm. and you know, back when I was like 20, you would have had to go in through the mail and like submit a resume. And know, like we have so much more access to people and to opportunities now than we ever have. Like this is the time to, like, if you really wanted to go for something, you could go for it. And yeah, it doesn't always play out the way you want it to. And Drew, like you said, you know, it doesn't, you know, that your situation wasn't the norm, but like, it's just like, if you're really passionate about something, just go for it, you know?
Yeah, you have to go for it, but you also have to realize that because people have so much more access to try to do that, there's that much more people.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's, if you don't get a response, it doesn't mean that your work is no good, you know? And that's another thing too. Don't send work, you know, if you send work, don't send don't. I wrote this Planet of the Apes novel. Will you guys publish it? Absolutely not. They won't even read it.
Right, right.
They can't read it because they don't have a contract with you. They didn't solicit. If they said to you, hey, okay, let's see what you want to write, and then you send it to them, then there's a legal agreement there that belongs to you, even though it's their characters and blah, blah, blah. And they may not make it, but you've talked to them about it on the correct level then. You can't just blind send things. And I've tried to tell people this all the time because they can't even look at it. They have to throw it out. Because if you have a character in there that they didn't ask you to show them anything, and that character is in the next movie because they just so happened to develop the same idea, you could try to sue them for that, even though if they didn't steal it from you. So they're not going to look at it, you know. The best thing to do, the smartest way to break into this whole thing is to make your own thing. Like, do what I did, but not for a license. You know, create, get whatever money you need to, whether it's a Kickstarter or wherever you have to do it, to create your own comic book or game or anything. And then with that, you have a name, and then you can start talking to these people.
Sure.
So that's where it's weird how I did it, because I did all the stuff you're supposed to do for creator-owned thing, but somehow got a license in there.
No, hey, it worked out. That's awesome. So Planet of the Apes was the first IP that you've worked with. When did this book for Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes come out?
It came out in 2011. We got the license in 2008. It took us a while.
Took you a little while to get.
Yeah.
This is actually pushed. It was published by
Archaea,
who do mm-hmm. some great comics, by the way.
Yeah. Are they still around?
I thought they were. Are they? Are they? I don't know.
Imprint. They might be an imprint of Boom now, because I know.
Oh,
Boom,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Boom bought them a while ago. Yeah.
But they were putting out Mouse Guard and like the Jim Henson titles, and they had some really cool stuff. So you know, this is really cool. And I'm gonna tell folks this book. If you are at all a fan of the original Planet of the Apes movies, this book actually goes in between the first movie and the second movie.
Part of this book takes place during the first movie. And then the sequel book to that, Death of the Planet of the Apes, came out from Titan like a year or two ago.
Okay.
And that takes place during second movie. So, yeah. So
that's
Yeah. Okay. Together they tell the story of what was going on behind the scenes. Because honestly, there's a lot of plot holes between the first and second movie. There's dates that are weird, and like characters who were about to be on trial for treason are now married and are friends with the guy who was going to put them on trial. And so it's like, I wove this story to try and make that all make sense between the two books. So,
okay. Nice. So,
yeah. Titan put out Death of the Planet of the Apes 2 years ago. It's a regular novel. It doesn't have the paintings in it or anything. Cool. But it's a sequel to that.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Let's talk a little bit about how you said you're also the IP consultant for Predator.
Yes.
So what do you do? Like, we just watched the AVP movies the other night, which I'll keep my comments for those movies to myself. But what have you done for the Predator franchise?
I wrote the in-house Bible. Okay. It's about 700 pages long, and I'm not making that up. It's
wow.
682 or something like that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, basically what we did was they were hoping The Predator was going to be a huge financial success.
Yeah.
So they wanted to gear up a whole new licensing thing that was going to be spinning out of that. So they were planning on a whole bunch of other products, and obviously the movie didn't do what they'd hoped, so that was pretty much shelved. Now we have some cool things coming out, like that video game that just came out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Dark Horse has been putting out some really good comics, but now Marvel has the license, so that's going to be changing also. But regardless, this Bible, I had to read every novel and comic series, and obviously watch the movies and play every video game, and basically write an encyclopedia for everything that was in all these things.
Wow. Okay.
And I looked for common themes and threads throughout all Predator products, even though they weren't planned that way. You can see that every author seems to have this one idea of, this is definitely what Predator is. And whenever that it's interesting because you read all these stories that seem like they have nothing to do with each other in just one shot comic series or something. And you'll see there's something that actually makes sense that follows the same theme throughout the whole thing. So,
okay.
All Predator stories should have themes like this. The tone should always be this. An encyclopedia entry for every weapon that's appeared in it, a bio for every character. That's what this Bible thing is. And that was for Fox to use internally with the intention of it going out to licensors. So.
Okay. Very cool. Very awesome. Is there anything that in that Predator Bible that people aren't like, is there anything like any kind of little bit of information that like most people would like not be aware of?
I mean, I don't understand what you mean by that, because
I mean, I think that there's something like I don't know, like I'd look at that the IP like the Predator Bible and see like what see if there was anything that I would like look at and be like, oh my god, like I didn't realize that about this IP. I don't know. Maybe I'm just.
I think I know what you're saying. Like, I'll give you an example here. A lot of complaints about Shane Black's The Predator, mm-hmm. was that suddenly the Predators were using DNA to try and make themselves better and all this stuff. And people are like, where'd that come from?
Right.
And I go through the comics and I go through the novels and everything. And I'm like, this has been in the background forever.
And okay.
Even the script for The Predators from 2010, the Predators who look different in that movie,
mm-hmm.
and this was shot and just not, it was cut. You find out that they've been augmenting their DNA. So apparently this has been part of the license, at least in the background, forever. And people wouldn't realize that, you know?
Okay.
So
sure.
When you look at all that, what Shane was doing makes perfect sense. It flows out of that, but you don't realize these things until it's all together, I think, you know, and you can look at it in that form. That's what the Bible was good for. And one of the things that I did do with it was try to do a lot of the same stuff I did in the Alien role-playing game, which was, okay, so this would make sense if this, you know, so mm-hmm. like the dots between these stories, which seem to have no connection whatsoever. So to give it a coherent overarching story and make it so that things that otherwise wouldn't be canon could be considered canon and be okay. in that level. So,
sure. Well, speaking of the Alien role playing game, which we talked about earlier and kind of mentioned, and how you've won all sorts of awards in 2020. 2020, despite everything else that's going on, at least it's coming up roses for Andrew Gaska. That's all I'm saying, right?
I mean, my first awards, and I haven't been able to get on a stage and embarrass myself with no pants that way instead of on video.
I'll tell folks that at Gen Con they had the Ennies, which is like the if you're not familiar with the Ennies, it's like the role-playing awards it's like an industry award for role-playing games. and Drew won the gold Ennie for Alien, and he accepted it via just like this, like video conference, and he didn't wear any pants. And I think that's probably the first time someone has ever accepted an Ennie in, you know, pantsless.
So I go down in the record books that way.
I guess. I kind of surprised me, but it didn't. It really didn't. You know. I don't know. It seems on point with you.
I practiced that for 12 hours.
I believe it. I'm just glad you're wearing pants for this session.
What makes you think I'm wearing pants? I am wearing pants.
Oh man. So I'm going to tell folks, if you haven't checked out this Alien, the role-playing game, this is a phenomenal book. And it's, I've said this time and time again, and if you are a fan of the Alien IP, this is just as much a source book as it is a role-playing game. This book for Alien is like what the Star Wars RPGs were for me back, you know, when West End Games put out their source books. This is just a phenomenal. I forget how many pages it is, Drew.
It's like 400,
almost 400 pages. Yeah, yeah. It's just beautifully done. There's just immense art and the layout is. It looks and feels like an Alien book should be.
See that's.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's interesting. You said that. So, like the Planet of the Apes book, the conspiracy that you see there, I art directed that. You know, I figured out layout. I actually picked the icons we were going to use. Yada yada. So I'm used to being like in control of making a book look a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have done work for hire in the past, I've usually been like kind of disappointed with the way the book looks in the end if I wasn't the one who was doing it.
Sure. And
when they sent me what this was going to look like, I was like, I could not have in any way made this any better than it is. It is fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
The art choices, the saturation of black. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when these books shipped, you could smell the ink on them. So heavy.
You could.
Yeah. So, you know, it's Thomas's rule system is fantastic. Martin Gripp's art is fantastic. The graphic designer, everybody's work is just great on this book. And I think it's important to say that, you know, you said I won the award. I accepted the award, but it's really Alien that won the award.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm kind of being, you know, ridiculous when I say it's just you. It is, there's a whole team behind this line.
And everybody deserves praise for it because it's one of those things. It's one of those things where everybody who worked on it actually cares about the property. And that is so rare in licensing. A lot of people, it's like, you know, when things get pitched, right, it's some company decides, hey, I was doing the accounting for this, and I think we could make some money doing an Alien book. Okay, so let's go to Fox. Hey, Fox, we offer you this amount. We think we can make you this amount. Fox says, oh, approved. And I'm just using Fox as an example here because this is the entire industry of licensing, okay? I could have easily said Universal. And then it's like, great, we got that license. Who's going to write this? See if you can get that guy. You can't get him? Don't you have a friend who writes? See if he'll write it. You know, it's like they don't think about how this is going to be creatively after that, and they weren't necessarily fans of it, which is why in licensing we have a lot of things out there that you're like, I love Voltron. But maybe not the Voltron, whatever. And again, just picking Voltron because it popped in my head. I could have easily have said Robot.
Transformers.
Yes, yeah, Transformers. Perfect. Okay. I could say anything for that, but that's my point. To have so many people who love this property on it, it really shows in the final book, and I think that's why it's getting what it's getting.
Absolutely. And not only did you write the core rule book, you also wrote the cinematic scenario. For some reason, whenever I have you on, I can't ever remember the word scenario. The cinematic scenario, Chariot of the Gods. This is also your work here, which is like a three act. Like I kind of want to say it's like a mini campaign because it's not really like you could probably play it in like you know, probably like 9 hours if you really want to play it really well through.
Yeah, I think 3 hours per act is average on that, which is funny because originally the plan was to make it be a 3 hour scenario. The idea of the cinematic scenarios was supposed to be the equivalent of sitting down and watching a movie, but you're playing. But I mean, because I can't stop putting detail into things, it's sort of gotten, you know, it expands. And I think that's great because people get more for their money, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that, and of course, I don't know about you, but like whenever I sit down and play an RPG with my friends, like we never, like it usually devolves into like ridiculous, like side things that nobody really like doesn't, that nobody really addresses in some of these like modules or scenarios. And it's good because, I mean, this, even though this book is, you know, it's only, this book is only like 44 pages long. I've seen multiple playthroughs of this, and they've ended differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, everybody's different. Mm-hmm.
So even though there doesn't seem like there's a lot of pages here, there's a lot of information here, and there's a lot of options in here, and I love that. And yeah, it's knowing how my group plays, like to have different options and to have be able to go, okay, yeah, they went to this side of the ship and they saw this thing, whereas like another group would have gone after this, you know. Other, you know, it's just funny how we get distracted at the table sometimes, and you have pretty much like backup plans for almost anything that that happens on in this scenario.
Yeah, that's my number one thing when writing these things is to sit there and say, okay, what's the stupidest thing that the players could do that would catch the GM blindsided? Because, you know, and it's like whatever I think, okay, this is kind of ridiculous, but they might do this, and I try to work something in there for that. And it's funny that Dave. Dave Seamark. He hates it. I can't remember his name wrong. Right. You know who I'm talking about. Can you?
I do. I, you know what? We were chatting earlier yesterday. We were chatting yesterday because he called me out for mispronouncing Merk Borgi, the RPG. I called it Morkborg, and he's like, that's not how it's pronounced, Doug. And I'm like, I know, I need to learn how to pronounce these things. And like, everybody should just realize that I mispronounce everything. It doesn't matter if it's Swedish, French, Italian, Spanish, or even English for that matter, which is my native language. I'll mispronounce it.
So you don't know how to say his name either.
I don't know. That's basically me saying that I don't know how to pronounce his name. I say Seamark.
Okay, so Dave Seamark. That's probably right because I said Seamark on the award ceremony, so it's probably a Seamark. But Dave Seamark, it's like he put because he ran the playtest for Destroyer of Worlds, the new adventure that just came out, and he put marks in the margins on things. He's like, I really don't think the players would ever do this, and in some cases, he was totally right. And so I was way off the rails with what I was like, just want to make sure this. So yeah, so there's a whole subplot that got taken out that I probably put in another adventure instead.
Oh man. Let's see here. So we've got some comments here. Phil G says, did Drew just say he's doing the Transformers RPG with Free League?
No.
If you build it, they will come. I'm going to tell you, if that's the case, I better be a freaking consultant on that game. That's all I'm saying. If Thomas passes me up on that, then we're going to have words.
I'm pretty sure that's not even on the table.
No, it's not. It's really not. It's that is like my dream. Like I would love to work on the Transformers IP, just as long as Michael Bay wasn't involved.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a totally other session.
Yes.
So, right now we're starting to see folks get the next few products from this Alien RPG in their hands, which is the starter kit, the starter set, and the Destroyer of Worlds cinematic scenario box set. That's got to be very exciting. You had your hands in both of those products, I'm going to assume. The starter set is kind of just a repackage of, it's a boiled down rules booklet of the core rule book, a lot of the dice, the map, the player's map, and then this Chariot of the Gods cinematic scenario. I think that was a smart move. I was telling folks when I was at Gamma Expo for Free League, I told them, because spoiler, I work for Free League just, you know, on my own. I told the retailers there that you know, one thing that we've found is that folks were having a hard time, especially retailers, were having a hard time keeping the core rule books in stock. But they would have all of these other, they'd have like the yeah. dice and the cards and the cinematic scenario. So, you know, they'd have all these extra products, but they couldn't really move them because they didn't have core rule books. Now, since we put it all in one box set, it's so much easier for retailers. And you should definitely, if you're a friendly local game store, you should definitely look at picking up the starter set. Yeah, that's
it's a, basically a cleaned up version of the beta test that we sent everybody back in May of last year. Like when you pre-ordered the game, the core book, we sent everybody a PDF, which was a condensed rules and chariot in there. And since there was such a positive reaction to that, and the scenario that you just said as well, where core books couldn't be kept on, you know, in stock, it just made sense to try and make that as a starter set that it makes it more accessible for everybody. And honestly, as a consumer, if I had anything, didn't have anything to do with this, I would be buying that starter set anyway, because the map, the dice and chariot in there alone, that's what, $60-something retail?
Something that's like, yeah, like 50 or so. That's, yeah, that's, it's pretty close to 60.
The dice are like $10 a set, right? So it's,
they're like 15, 16, something like that.
So that's $30 right there for just the two sets of dice.
Yeah.
The map is 20.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's a lot of money right there that you're getting for a great bargain in that starter set.
The other thing that I always like to tell folks is people always say, well, I've got the core set, I don't really need the starter set. You know what I'm going to tell you? You should probably pick up the starter set, because even if you've got the core rule book, because A, you get more dice. That's always a good thing. And B, you can use the starter rule set as like a player's guide. So if you want a GM, you can hand off that players that rule book, and your players can kind of learn the rules as you have the actual core rule book in your hand, which I think is a fantastic way to get folks interested in playing the alien role playing game.
Agreed.
Now, the Destroyer of Worlds. Do you want to tell folks a little bit about what the Destroyer of Worlds cinematic scenario is? You know what it's based around.
Well, it's part of a trilogy of adventures that's coming out. Okay. Chariot was the first. So there are plot threads from Chariot that spill into this. And it's like, I don't want to give any spoilers or anything like that.
Sure.
But you play a planet is being evacuated because the Union of Progressive Peoples, which is, you know, the socialist communist government in the alien universe, as William Gibson created that back ages ago in an unused script. It's been, I think once it was in a video game as well. And then this is the first, aside from that video game, which wasn't canon, this is the first canon appearance of them. But they're pushing their boundaries, moving ahead, and they're going to be claiming a planet that was formerly part of the United Americas. So it's being evacuated, and submarines have gone AWOL with something very important that the base needs to get back. And so they assemble you, this unit, out of people who've never worked together before, from different units who got left behind when everybody went to the front for whatever reason. Somebody was in a jail cell. Somebody was, you know, in med bay at the time. So they put this ragtag unit together, and they're told, go out and get those AWOL Marines and bring them in for us. And, you know, nothing goes as expected.
Sure. Very cool.
Yeah.
No, I think what's included in that cinematic scenario box set? Do you know? Is there cards and a map as well within that?
Yeah, the map is a giant map of the colony, and on the other side is a detailed breakdown of the base, the military base that the colony is built around, and the cards are like they in the starter set, but just geared towards Destroyer. There's two sets of cards. I think there's player cards, which have like the weapons and whatever on a card, so it's easier to just, you know, as reference. And then there's also agenda cards, because each of these characters have their own story going on, which not everybody in the group will know about. So everybody has something that's affecting them personally during this, and those cards get handed out to them, from what I understand. Yeah, if I'm off, tell me in the messages.
No, that is true because that's I've got the PDF download and that is part of the new mechanics. And I love the fact that you've kind of given folks a reason to kind of pick up this book or this cinematic scenario just to give it a little more twist of with the mechanics, and you're kind of adding something that, you know, isn't necessarily needed, but yet you're going to add it and make that scenario kind of unique and play a little bit different than any other scenario that players have played in before.
Totally. And I'm very interested to see how long Destroyer takes people to play. Because I kind of designed it in a way that if a GM wanted, he could set a campaign on that planet that ends with this module.
Okay. So,
I've detailed a whole lot of stuff on that colony, and there's talk about what the colony was like before the evacuation started. And so, you know, I wanted to give somebody a rich background to work with. So, I'm sure there's going to be people go off on weird tangents, and
that's right.
That's where the fun is.
So you said this is a trilogy. So am I to assume that they all kind of link together, or is it just three different cinematic scenarios that
it's a trilogy? They are loosely connected, and where something that happened in the first one is responsible for something that's happening in the second one.
Okay.
And the resolution of this is in the third one. So it's not the same characters at all, but it's, you know, it's actually much more realistic when you think about it than the way movies usually go, because it's always like this person, Ripley, encounters this thing, and then all this stuff comes out of it, but Ripley's the one who takes care of it again. And then Ripley's the one who takes care of it again. Instead, it's the other people who would be affected by the whatever it just happened, you know. So
nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm excited. So do we probably don't have any kind of ETA on that third module. I mean, people haven't even got this Destroyer of Worlds yet. I'm wondering. Hopefully, maybe it'll be like next year or something. We'll see. We'll see what.
Yeah, we have a Marine campaign book coming.
Yeah,
which will come first, and then the third module will be coming after that. I almost said the title, but I don't know if I can, so I won't.
Yeah, best not to. I'm really excited to hear that we've got ongoing support for the Alien line, because a lot of folks, you know, I think a lot of folks see these RPG, you know, these IP RPGs, and you know, you see the core book come out, and then you don't really hear anything after that. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, here's a module 6 months later, or here's a module. It's like, you know, maybe a year later. Oh, now it's the IP's not in the same control. So it's nice to see that Free League is really trying to, you know, put out lots of products for this IP.
Well, the game has tremendous support from the community. So, I mean, a friend of mine, I was telling him about the game. He's a huge Alien fan. He's like, I didn't even know this was out. I didn't know you were writing this. And then he messaged me the other day on Facebook, autograph about the book. He bought the book. He went and got it as soon as he got it, right? And I said, yeah, I asked him, because there's a typo that's in one of the printings. And so I said, yeah, is this typo there? And he's like, no, it says third printing. And I was like, third printing?
I think
the second printing, but I didn't know we were up to third already.
I actually think there's a fifth printing.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Last I knew, when I was at Gamma Expo, I'm pretty sure Thomas said that the fifth printing was already ordered.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome.
I mean, that kind of tells you how popular this book is.
It hasn't even been in stores a year yet. And where that's fifth printing, that's crazy.
I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me on that, but I almost think that he said fifth printing.
Well, we definitely can confirm that there's a third printing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's definitely more than
three printings. Yeah.
And I think that while we were at Gamma, the fourth printing was going out to distributors, and the fifth printing was already ordered.
Wow.
Again, Thomas, if you're watching this, and I'm misquoting, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure that's. Needless to say, it's. Free League has put a lot of stock behind this IP in this game, and they're trying to make sure it's as accessible as possible for retailers and for players.
Hold on one second. We're getting a message in from someone named Thomas. It says, Thomas, you're fired.
Yeah, I no longer work for Free League. So if anybody has any work for me, I would be glad to. I'll shoot me an email at. No, I'm just kidding. Thomas is awesome, and I think if I said that, if I incorrectly stated a print run, I think that that's the least of the things that I could probably spoil on this podcast.
We're both fired for letting it loose that there's going to be a Transformers game. Oops.
No. Oh, whoops. Oh man. Oh, geez. So you said you're working on the campaign, the Space Marines campaign. Is there anything else that you've been working on? What else you get? Is that pretty much your sole thing right now, or what else you got going on, Drew? It seems like you've got your fingers and your hands and everything at this point.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm working on four other major projects. Okay.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I really can't tell anybody what they are yet.
We're not
to announce it. Yeah, unfortunately, but I'm working on some. I finished a trio of graphic novels for a major franchise that nobody will guess, and I'm working on prose for another gaming thing and a couple other things. So I can't say what they are yet, unfortunately.
Your phone is just ringing off the hook now that you got all these awards. I mean, that's pretty much. I mean, I had to go through your agent to book you for Granicon. So,
you went for yourself.
Yeah, basically, I'm folks aren't aware I'm Drew's agent. No, I'm
not
really.
He's not my agent. I don't have an agent.
I'm not really. We just kid around that I am.
If there are agents out there who need a client, I need to replace this guy real fast. So,
I'm not doing my job very well. If this is the best gig that Drew can get booked on, he definitely needs a better agent. Let's put it that way. Oh man, Drew, you're the best. I always enjoy having you on, and I'm so disappointed that we couldn't get together this year at Gen Con or PAX Unplugged or anything. You know, I really, you know, it was a treat meeting you at PAX Unplugged last year, and it's just been awesome. You know, as soon as we met, we got along real well. So I'm really glad that I have this opportunity to do this. You know, I said this on the session before that 99% of the time when I have somebody on, it's mostly because A, I want to see them succeed, and I'm really excited. B, I'm excited about their projects, and C, they're my friends. So I just, you know, I just enjoy connecting with my friends and being. You know, sharing, you know, the awesomeness that are the people that I know.
You know, we're not friends, right?
Oh, that's right. I'm supposed to call you Mr. Gaska. I apologize.
No, I mean, seriously, when I met you, we obviously clicked right away, and it's great. And you can always have me on for anything, for sure.
Okay. Well, we're going to start a Transformers podcast here next week. So, no, I'm not really. We're not really starting. On
that if you had to, yeah.
Although we could do a G.I. Joe podcast.
I'm your man for that.
Let's talk about 80s cartoons. Is that your 80s jam? Is that what you grew up on, G.I. Joe or and Transformers?
Yeah, but for me it was more the comic. I watched the cartoons, but for me I was more in love with the comics than the cartoons.
Sure.
Because the stories were much more mature with what they were, some of the things they were trying to do, especially G.I. Joe with Larry Hama talking about his experiences in Vietnam and stuff like that in a toy comic, which is just crazy.
Yep.
I'm a huge G.I. Joe fan.
A couple of years ago, I actually Larry Hama was at GraniteCon, and I got to meet him, and he's just a phenomenal human being. Just a wonderful, wonderful man.
It's so much surreal stuff when you are a fan of this stuff and then wind up with a career in it. But I've been on a writing panel with Larry sitting next to me, talking about different styles of writing. It's just, it's bizarre to be in a situation like that.
That's going to be so surreal. Like how do you even like, oh my God.
What's even weirder about it is that like Larry was one of the first quote celebrities in comics that I met when I was in eighth grade. The local comic shop was having a signing and I was a huge G.I. Joe fan. So me and my friend went and we're standing in line and my friend is like, I'm going to ask him, who killed the Hardmaster? For people who don't know what that is, that was a big secret in G.I. Joe. The Hardmaster was Storm Shadow's uncle in charge of the clan, And everybody thought Storm Shadow had killed him, but it turned out he didn't, or at least he claimed he didn't, yada, yada. This whole thing was going on. And he's like, I'm going to ask him. I was like, he's not going to tell you. And he's like, no, I'm going to ask him. I'm totally going to ask him. I dared him that he was going to. So sure. We get out there, and my friend is in front of me, and he goes next. And he goes up there, and he's like frozen. He's like, here, thank you, Mr. Hammer, and just leaves, right?
Right.
No, wait a second. Larry, who killed the Hard Master? Do we want to give a spoiler for something that's 35 years old? Is that all right?
I think that's fine. At this point. Yeah.
Okay. And he goes, it was Zartan, of course, and does his maniacal laughter, okay? But BS, it couldn't be Zartan. Okay, this was at issue like 40 in the comic, okay?
Yeah.
By issue 75, they still hadn't said who killed the Hard Master. I'm guessing on the number, but it was definitely in the 70s, 75 or whatever comes out, and they reveal Zartan killed the Hard Master. And I'm like, we knew this years ago because Larry just decided to tell us, and I couldn't believe that Larry had plotted that far in advance. Turns out that's not how Larry does things at all.
Okay? Oh, really? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Larry has said that he doesn't know what's going to be on page 19 until he gets to the end of page 18. Of every issue, okay? And so, like, I based my writing technique on something that I just assumed was true based on that with Larry. And I plan everything way out in advance and where it's going to go and blah, 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 blah. And no, he's not that at all.
So, oh, that's funny. That's great. That kind of reminds me of something that happened with me. A few years ago, I got invited to see Peter Laird. You know, the one of the co-creators of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh yeah.
Peter. Yeah. And it was it was at Steve Levine's studio in Maine. And so there was a whole bunch of people that were invited to this thing, and we were all standing in line. And of course, there's all these Ninja Turtle fans, and they're all like standing. There was these two brothers in front of me, and they were geeking out because they were going to meet Peter. Because Peter's—I don't know if folks are aware—but Peter is very private. He doesn't do a lot of conventions anymore. He doesn't like to travel a lot, so he usually just sticks around, you know, his home here in the Northeast. So this was a huge thing for folks that were fans of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So these the two brothers, and they had come from miles. And I we were talking, we got to know each other because we were standing there. And these two brothers, they were probably like in their 20s. And I said to one of them, I can't remember what his name was, but I said, I dare you, when you get up to meet Peter, say, Mr. Laird, I'm such a fan of your work with Street Sharks. It was so amazing. And the guy goes, will you pay me? I'm like, I will pay you $20 if you do that. When you get up to, he's like, I don't know if I can do it. He's like, I'm like, I'll give you $20 if you do it. Cause that's, you know, who. And so he gets up and he's like right in front of me. And it was exactly like how you said, how he like got all like shaky and like really quiet. And he just handed Peter and he's like, thank you, Mr. Laird. And like, I'm like, no. You were just talking in line. Don't you have a question to ask him? And the guy gave me like the dirtiest look. He's like, I'm like, okay, well, I'll just ask him. I'm like, so what inspired you to think of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? With, you know, it's just like, it's totally not the question. And the guy just.
That's funny. Yeah. People freeze with the, well, on the celebrity line. I've got another story. It's like my cousin and I were online to get Carrie Fisher's autograph. And Carrie was not in a good mood. Like she's just, it wasn't that she was mad at anyone, but it was just clear that I don't want to be doing this. I've been doing this all day. And it was just like, not looking up, total serious face, just sign. Yep. That's it. Okay. And so, I used to have a radio show, on Long Island, and my name on the show was Dr. Pornstar. Okay,
I wondered if this was going to come up during this podcast. By the way, I almost put money on it.
So my cousin was saying he was going to ask her all these questions, and then of course he gets up there and does the frozen thing and doesn't do anything, right? So I get up to her and I say, "Hey, Carrie, can you sign it to Dr. Pornstar? And can you say something dirty?" And you saw her eyes sparkle. And she wrote this whole long thing out on it.
Oh my god!
And I still have that photo today. And it's just like, it's interesting for me because I've had, I was also really close friends with Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica. Yep. And so I've seen the behind the table as well as the in front of the table for these celebrities who, because they were on TV or in a movie, they've touched so many people's lives. Like people have been seriously affected by their work, you know? and it's just, you just see that like sometimes they need something to make them realize, okay, this isn't the worst thing in the world I could be doing. You know, so you give them a little laugh. I would jump in the line of Richard's signatures every now and then when he wasn't looking up. And I, when I got up to the thing, I'd be like, you were so great as Starbuck in Battlestar Galactica. And he'd look at me. And, oh, my God. So you got to have fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of these folks, you know, I've mentioned this before, but like, a lot of them are just like you and me, and like they didn't really anticipate affecting people's lives. They didn't anticipate, you know, people wanting their autographs, and so that's a big, you know, that takes a little bit to adjust to. And you know, I was lucky enough to have lunch with Peter Mayhew when he was alive, and Peter sat and talked with me, and he was like, you know, when, you know, I was just this tall, lanky guy, you know, filming Star Wars, and we all thought we were in this desert, you know, thinking George was, you know, mental. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you had told me back then when we were filming the first Star Wars movie that, you know, I'd be making a career out of going around the country, going around the world, signing autographs and doing appearances, and people would want to be with me, and want to have pictures with me, he's like, I would have told you were just as crazy as George was. He's like, but it's amazing. Like, and he's like, but yeah, there are certain days where you just kind of want to just be by yourself and you just don't want to do the con circuit. You want to be home. He's like, and that's tough. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe Carrie was having one of those days. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that, but it's different. It's odd to see, you know, it's always good to see, you know, how we as like fans of different IPs and different actors and actresses, like, you know, it's still work for them. It's, you know, to do these conventions, yeah. and you know, be out there, and they're taking time away from their families to interact with us a lot of times.
I mean, I usually do 12 to 14 cons a year. Most of those are in the spring and summer, and mm-hmm. In some place like in June, I may not be home any weekends for that month. You know. Yep. And I love doing it. I mean, I get a lot of exercise doing it. I think I was telling you about this before, actually. You get to go to great restaurants and you get to see people you don't usually see, anything like that, but it is still work. And when you come home, you are exhausted. And I'm sure people who just go to the cons as fans are having that same issue being afterwards. It's, you know, you have to be on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's that. You don't necessarily have the time to turn yourself off, and sometimes people need that, and so it's tough. The people who are bigger, like Carrie and stuff like that, they had to do this stuff. When they did do it, you know, there was never a time where Carrie's line didn't have a line. You know what I mean? Because it was Carrie Fisher. It wasn't like when I do a convention signing and there's crickets. You know
what? What convention signs are you doing? I'm appalled by this.
Yeah. No, it's like, you know, there'll be a spurt, but then there'll be like several hours where you're sitting there like, okay, you know, because everybody's doing other things at the convention. They're not there, just, right. You know, but they are there to see Carrie, you know? So.
Well, now that you've got all these awards, Drew, I mean, now 2021, when you do these conventions, you're just going to have lines through the, you know, out the door.
Is that how it's going to work?
As your agent, I'm telling you this.
As my agent, then make it happen.
I will.
You need to hire those crisis actors.
No. Oh, man. Drew, we're coming up on an hour. I want to thank you so much for coming on and being a highlight of my GraniteCon at Home broadcast. Thank you so much for doing all that you do. Thank you for being such a cool friend and person and creator and author. And, you know, I'm really fortunate that we've been able to get to know each other over these last few months. And you're more than welcome to come on whenever you want.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
And hopefully next year we can do GraniteCon in person and you can actually come over to the Northeast. And because I know this is originally kind of where you're from, you know, you're from the East Coast. So hopefully you can come back over and do these conventions that we do here in the Northeast with us. And you know, actually get to hang out a little bit more in person.
That would be great. There's one thing I wanted to mention though.
Yeah.
When I was giving you my website information and stuff that you wanted to put on the thing, you complained that my website name was really long. And yeah. I'm looking at the screen here, and it's just as long as at Victory Condition Gaming.
Well, you see, it's not the same size. If you're a layout, like if you look at that, the font is smaller.
Okay.
So right. I'm just saying that I had to shrink down the font so I could fit it down there. It was almost like your bio that you sent over for all the press that I had to do leading up to this event. You know, I had to kind of shrink that down a little bit too. But it's been great to, and as much as I like to kid you about your bio being so large and so long to get, you know, put online and everywhere, it's been really great to see it get added to even more so these last few months as we've gotten to know each other. And I have no doubt that it's going to just keep continually getting longer and more vast and more words added to it here in the next months and years ahead, because you're just a phenomenal guy. And I'm really excited about what you got coming up.
Thank you.
So if you would like more Drew Gaska in your life, where should folks go?
The link we were just talking about, roguereviewer.wordpress.com. Am I pointing in the right direction from your
point of view? Yeah, right there. Yep.
You can also find me on Facebook. Andrew E. Gaska is my personal Facebook. We're trying to drive more people to Andrew E. C. Gaska, which is my author page. So, you know, we're going to be putting a whole bunch of content on there as well. And my Twitter is also right there, at Andrew E. C. Gaska. So look for me.
Awesome.
I'm open to talk to fans. I'm in the Alien, I'm in the Free League Alien RPG fan group. I answer questions. I love being contacted by fans. So please, let's talk.
Awesome. All right, folks, you heard it here first. Go DM Drew Gaska, you know, at all hours of the day, because he wants to talk with you.
You always make me regret everything.
No, that's not true. You always make me regret everything I say. It's about time I got some payback.
Good point.
Yeah. All right, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in to this session for GraniteCon at Home. We'll be back later with some more content. We've got Pete Walsh from IDW Games to join us. We've got some previews for their upcoming Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles board game expansion that you're going to get exclusively here on VCG. Stick around. If you like this session, please give a like down below. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, please hit that subscribe button. We'd love to have you part of our YouTube community. And if you have friends that would like to know all about Drew Gaska, make sure to share this link as well. So thank you everyone for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Thank you, Drew.
Thank you.
It was a blast as always.
Have a good one.
Be safe, be well, and remember, winning shouldn't be the only victory condition when you get to the table.